everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Apartment Investing for Early Retirement. Today's guest is Hadar Arkibi. With nearly two decades of full-time real estate experience, Hadar specializes in long-distance, out-of-area, and out-of-country investing, and is also an asset manager with MFIHolding.com. Hadar's portfolios include multifamily apartments and commercial real estate in New Zealand and the United States. That has allowed him to exit the rat race with passive income and live a lifestyle by design with his family. Over the years, Hadar implemented different strategies, which included wholesaling, house flipping, subdivision and new construction, commercial real estate, joint ventures, and now multifamily investing. Hadar enjoys helping both seasoned and beginning real estate investors to reach their wealth, income, and portfolio goals through multifamily real estate. Hadar is a coach with Jake and Gino and MIHmastermind.com. Hadar, welcome to the show.
Hi, Derek. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for coming on the show. Really excited to dig into everything. But first, why don't you just start by giving us a little bit of a background, how you got to where you're at today, what your story was.
Okay. So generally, I've been in real estate for about close to 20 years now. Started as a real estate agent in Israel. And in the early 2000s, we immigrated to New Zealand. When I arrived to New Zealand, I arrived and wasn't able to do a job which was like anything with in terms of having a profession or being a licensed agent over there. I kind of got into the manual labor of picking up some grapes and fruits in the beautiful wineries and orchards of say, Central Otago in the South Island. At the same time, I was... It's really boring job. It's very repetitive, picking up those grapes and finning those fruits and raking the leaves and all those things, which you just keep doing it every day, the same thing within the season. I noticed that the real estate cycle then back in the early 2000, 2003, 2004, was really in the upswings globally. And it was everywhere in the media, and I got... attracted to the opportunity of getting myself educated. So back then I was walking through the vineyard with CDs, if you like, and what then used to be, I think, an MP4 players, MP3 players, those little small ones, and listening and educating myself about real estate investing, residential and commercial. Quickly enough, I decided to start wholesaling. And I started wholesaling. In the beginning, I started assigning contracts. Then I started doing contemporaneous settlements, which is double closings, and evolved into then building my own buy and hold portfolio in New Zealand. Fast forward 15 years, I built a reasonable size portfolio of small multifamily real estate apartments and commercial real estate, mainly retail. And the markets in New Zealand in the last, if you like, seven to 10 years really appreciated to a level which is became more of a capital appreciation market in opposed to a yield play market. So the market that I invest in, which is Auckland, New Zealand, particularly, it's more like, if you like, San Francisco, Boston, New York, where the cap rates are really compressed.
So... you know, I know that you invest here in the States. How did you kind of go about getting comfortable with doing so when you're living on the other side of the planet? You know, what kind of made you interested in U.S. real estate? And then kind of what were some of the steps that you went to assembling that team?
Yes. So the first really thing that triggered me to look into the U.S. was my why, if you like. Every person needs to have a very strong why, because this is a very... starting in real estate as a general, in general, and really taking the leap to go full time and making it happen, if you like, really needs to have a strong drive and a strong why to make it happen. So for me, the need to grow my portfolio, answering the question, real estate in general, you know, it's a great vehicle for wealth creation. But in the end of the day, we need cash flow to be able to live the lifestyle by design that now I achieved after being, you know, close to 20 years in the business. It's a process. And really, the only way to be financially free is to create multiple streams of income and create cash flow, because cash flow pays the bill. And what happened in New Zealand, my portfolio appreciated significantly But any asset or new asset that I will buy today or even in the last 5 or 6 years would not cash flow significantly. So to achieve the income goal that I had for me and my family and to build that lifestyle by design that I wanted, I had to go further afield. So I had to really go into the US. Being an American citizen, which my mother was born in Chicago, you know, American citizen, I could borrow money in the States and do business in the state. So I decided to research about investing in the US, and I seeked up and got some, jumped on BiggerPockets, made some relationships, looked into different markets. I looked into Memphis and I looked into Jacksonville, Florida and Salt Lake City and a few other markets, for example. When I traveled and visited some of these markets, I ended up in Memphis through some other friends who invest over there, mainly in single, you know, small multifamilies and houses, single families. I heard about the Arkansas market from a fellow investor of mine and a few other people within my network that I kind of got to know from BiggerPockets. And I came to Little Rock, Arkansas, in that particular example, and really felt that this market could be suitable for me because it was a little bit under the radar. It was very palatable. It was quite a small market. It's not too big that it was easy for me to start to get to know the sub-market, the suburbs, the bad street. It's not a market that you can get lost in. Let's put it this way. And one of the key points was I felt that I was able to build a good team on the ground, which is the number one key when you are investing, whether you are investing out of state or whether you are investing out of area. And of course, needless to say that the price to rent ratio in that particular market was, which is many other markets in the US that we're currently looking at, they stack up. You can actually buy a property, buy it for a price that the price to rent ratio will cash flow, and you can basically build your portfolio which will perform properly.
Yeah. So when you went about building that team, what were some of like the key players that you needed to have to assemble that? What would be, say, 3 or 4 main ones that you would recommend for people that you have to have a solid X?
First of all, number one, I mean, they all actually work together, but the main component to start with will be a good property management company. And the reason is that they know the area, typically, if they're good, inside out. They will be able to advise to you about the locations as you learn about the location, as you want to get familiarized. And when you underwrite deals and you get some deals coming in, and if you're new in the market, you really want to get feedback on those particular area and what you could achieve if you were renovated the property. What do they recommend that you do to the property, how you to improve the property. Apartments, for example, they will be able to advise if you need to have a majority of 2 bedrooms in opposed to 1 bedroom in that location, or perhaps washer and dryer hookups, or perhaps some amenities that the tenant expect to get. They will be able to advise, for example, things which is very, very important to know, things like the operating cost of apartment per year. So when we're underwriting the deals, we want to know what would the apartment would be in that particular marketplace, what would it cost to operate it per annum. So you want to get an indication for that from a property manager, because they obviously have a lot of properties on the book and they could easily analyze that and give you a feedback on that. Another person to ask that particular question, because you want to know the answer for that question, because when you underwrite the deal, you want to know that you're on target. Sometimes the brokers and the sellers, whether you buy privately or through a broker, they will give you a pro forma that indicates perhaps a very low operating cost per unit or perhaps a very high. If it's very low and you don't know that it's too low, you might assume that the property is going to perform great. But once you take it over, there will be a lot of hidden costs that they didn't disclose to you, or things that they shrink down that suddenly is going to eat all your profit. Or if they are very high or too high, perhaps you're going to be able to cut some of the costs. Like we say, we're doing real estate, we cut the cost and increase the rent, the income, we create a higher NOI. So we basically create a value add for the property. It's very important to know those things, the operating cost per unit.
Yeah, and to touch on that, when you're increasing that NOI and how that directly affects the value of the property, that's something that you don't really have with single family. So being able to have a little bit more control, obviously cap rates can fluctuate, but in terms of that NOI, the value of the property is based off of the income that you're producing. Obviously, there's that aspect of it, but what were some of the other reasons that kind of pulled you to multifamily? Why did you choose multifamily, you know, in Little Rock to build that wealth and have that cash flow?
I invest in Little Rock and surrounding area. So I'm mm-hmm. all over Central Arkansas. Pretty much the opportunity to scale up with the number of doors and income streams. When I come from in New Zealand, the maximum, and many other parts of the world, the maximum doors that you can get in one transaction, maybe 3, 4, 5, up to 10. But being able to buy 20, 30, 50, 150, 200 doors, multiple income stream in one transaction is quite a unique proposition for investment, which is quite unique to the U.S. I know it's available in some other country, but in America, we do have a lot of it. So being able to buy that under one roof, you know, few doors under one roof, or few roofs, if it's separate buildings, like my recent deal with 45 units, we have 10 fourplexes and one standalone apartment. So the economy of scales there, it's much more manageable. It's easier to manage one community with one maintenance crew and property manager and one deal that you can go and buy a multiple income stream transaction, in opposed to trying to find, let's say, 20 houses, 50 houses, or 100 houses. In one transaction, you can basically nail it and speed up your progress towards financial freedom and passive income. I want to mention as well, to answer the question about which other members in the team are very important, The second member to property manager would be the local lender. I encourage people to engage with the local lenders as fast as, in the minute they decide that they choose a market and they did their the market analytic to find out that this market has, for example, a suitable job growth and population growth, and the median income is on track. We like to see minimum $50,000 or so in the market that we invest in. We like to see a job growth of minimum 2% over the past 2 years. And the unemployment rate, we want to see a good unemployment rate of, let's say, not more than something like, let's say, under 5%. Back in the recession in 2010, the median unemployment rate in the U.S. was 9%. So just as an example, when you look on the market, not necessarily a market that has a good price to rent ratio, not necessarily going to be a good market to invest if the other fundamentals are not great. So you have to watch for that. A lender, local lenders are going to be a very important player in your team. I recommend for people to go and open a bank account with the local lender once they chosen a market. So the relationship is starting to build. So basically, you might find a deal that you couldn't fund. Maybe it's a distressed deal and you won't be able to fund it through an agency debt or any non-recourse debt because it's not stabilized or there's high vacancies. So the local lenders, if you stabilize the rapport with them, the track record and the relationship, even if you open a bank account and put $1,000 and get a secure credit card, you're still going to be in a position that they lend you because you have an existing relationship with them. And the third person will be your boots on the ground, preferably a fellow investor. It could be a fellow investor. It could be maybe your property manager or your maintenance guy. If you got to know a handyman or somebody like that, that's really, really important.
How did you go about vetting to be able to select that local lender that was going to be able to build this relationship with, you know, to get on that same track for buying the type of properties that you're buying there? What were some criteria that you went when you were filtering through the various local banks?
Good question, Derek. In that particularly case, when I came to the market, I met with quite a few local lenders, and I wanted to meet with lenders not to hear the term sheets only, because you go to talk to them and you ask for term sheet, they're going to give you the off the cuff, off the shelf term sheet, which is typically 5%, 5-year balloon. Quite a high-ish interest rate and maybe 15 to 20 years amortization. So you get kind of the same answer from all of them. But what I wanted to know is really if in my particular situation, first of all, the size of the bank, to make sure it's a reasonable state size bank or even multi-state bank. Some community banks, they operate in maybe 3 or 4 states around your state. They're not necessarily only in one state. So that's a good thing. But the main thing was that they are comfortable to working with, in my case, in out of area investors, out of area and out of states, and in my case, even a US citizen, but lives abroad. So for me, that was one of the key factors.
So with the properties that you're getting, say, value add deals, are you getting, from a local lender, getting that initial debt on that and then refinancing into agency debt? Or what is kind of what you typically do for your plan?
Yes, so typically I like to buy value add opportunities, and I prefer property that have some problems, but ideally you want something that has some vacancy so you can rip into those fast and renovate the apartments and turn them and start getting renovated apartments on the market, renovated product that you can really charge market rent straight away once you turn them around. And we also have opportunities that my latest deal, for example, had the 35% loss to lease. Loss to lease, it means that the rent that you're currently receiving when you're buying it, it's well below market rent, 35% in my case, below market rent. And in effect, you're buying the property on a very low cap rate or even a very low debt cover ratio. In my case, it was under 5, just around 5%, 4.9 or something like that. But we know that there is enough meat on the bone to increase the rents by 35% to market. So those particular properties often difficult to fund because especially if you're out of area and if you're a beginning investor and you don't have experience, some community bank could worry that maybe you don't know what you're doing, or perhaps you don't have enough capital to service the property until it gets stabilized. So it's very important for us to work with somebody who is willing to work with us. In that particular deal that I bought now, I had quite a few lenders that know me, and we've been communicating for maybe 3 or 4 years, around that time frame. I met with 2 or 3 of them. Two of them went to committee and they didn't approve the loan because there was also 25% vacancy and the debt covered ratio was really low projected for the first year because the rent was so low. But the last bank that actually came to the table and funded the deal was the lender that we had a relationship with, the one I met with every time that I came to visit the town, and the one that we had a secure credit card with and had some rents coming in, coming out from smaller investment properties that I've done. I bought like a 4-plex, triplex when I started here to test the market, to test my property mm-hmm. manager, to test the contractors, and I've done some rehab on those smaller ones. So we had some track record there, and they came to the table and they certainly funded the deal. It's not agency debt term. It wasn't a 30-year amortization and a sub 5% interest rate and 80% to cost. But it was enough to get the deal across the line. And now we are 4 months in, and I think that in another 90 days or so maximum, I will be in a position to refinance it out to perhaps even another community bank that will be competitive and will give me higher amortization and lower interest rate and 80% of appraised value. So I'm not necessarily going to go to non-recourse agency right now because I may not have the asset stabilized at 90% for 90 days when I want to do it. I have a significant amount of cash that they have to put in the deal. And more important for me now is to pull the money out and invest it in another opportunity that I have off market here and keep the velocity of money of the deal. So the property is going to cash flow great, well over 10%, even with no money down in the deal. So it's an infinite return really, but more important for me is to pull the money out. I could always go to agency once it's fully stabilized and when I can really maximize the permanent long-time debt.
Yeah, capitalize on the velocity of capital, get it into the next one, and then can always refinance into agency later once you fit that criteria, but just pull some out, and that's that's the power of the refinance, is be able to pull some of that back in, get another one, keep that ball rolling. You know, so talking about that deal that had 35% loss to lease, 25% vacancy, when you're underwriting a deal, what are some of the ways that you stress test it?
Great question. I increase the vacancy. So in that particular case, I really kind of, because it was already 25% vacant, I kind of dropped it down to about 35%, just in case once the residents know that there is a new sheriff in town, if you like, that we don't have an exodus and we don't have suddenly a lot of people escaping, because we did have some units that were in reasonable condition that we could increase the rent straight away. But what we did there, I'm just going to cover it as we go, because it's a very important point to make. We approached some of the existing residents and we told them that we are going to increase the rent. So we didn't take it, for example, from 450 to 600 straight away. Some of them, we told them, we're just going to take it to 550, but we're going to give you, for example, you can do 3 to 6 months first at the same rent, but then the next 12 months will be at 550. So we kind of locked them in on an 18-month lease with the increase in rent coming after the first 6 months. Now I'm reducing it to 3 months because I don't really need to lock them in anymore. In the beginning, we offered 6 months. Now we offer 3 months at the same rate. And new apartments that we renovated, we basically gone straight into 595 to 625. So they could see that there is a lot of improvement going on there. In terms of stress testing, again, we increased the vacancy, we increased the interest rate. So I predict a higher interest rate, perhaps in a refinance even. So we increased it for at least a point and a half above. We increased the exit cap rate. Although I'm not really buying this to sell it, I did the refi cap rate to be a point and a half. So for example, if now it's traded at 7% cap rate, once it's stabilized, I did a refi cap rate of 8%. Together with that, I did no rent growth at all as well. So I'm not counting on any 3% rent growth. And some of those lenient markets which you invest in, like Arkansas and like some other markets, you don't really have a constant rent growth of 3, 4, 5, 7% year on year. So I basically manufacture the equity and manufacture the rent growth, but following year three, I predict no rent growth. And another thing that we do is that we actually do a rent decline. So we can do 3 to 5% rent decline in the first year, and then we do stable, and then we do pretty much, zero, and then we do maybe 2%. So we kind of play with it really to see few different options of stress testing. So to recap on that, it's vacancy, it's interest rate, it's exit or refinance cap rate, and rent growth. We do allow for index to inflation cost, operating cost growth, which is typically we do 3% on that.
Great. When you're looking at a deal, you can manufacture it to make it look really good, but it's try to beat it up as much as you can just to see. Now, the likelihood of being, 35% vacant or 30% or 25%, once you kind of stabilize the property, the odds of that going to that high of a vacancy, probably not that high, but just know where you're at so you don't get caught. But yeah, I think those are some great, great metrics is just, see, again, knowing what market you're in and how that rent growth or how it doesn't really grow. So you get that big bump, and then it just rides out the same. So great insight there. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I'll just like to add that when I'm underwriting, I'm also doing a expense component of repair and maintenance. Typically, I do 10 to 12% of the rent roll. And I do it from the stabilized rent roll. So if this asset is going to be turning over rent roll of $300,000, I'm putting there, for example, $30,000 expenses in repair and maintenance, and it still need to stack up. And I'm checking that the expense component from the rent roll, all the expense all up, is about even 50%. So I can tell you that now the asset is really getting to a position that it's stabilized, and we don't have much rent maintenance requests anymore because we put so much back from the capex at the front end. So all of that $30,000, it might be chopped down to 10, I think, in the first year, like moving forward, because there's not a lot of, unless there is a big event that we're not predicting, which we are saving for on a month-to-month anyway in reserves, you know, that 10% for repair maintenance might not be applicable moving forward in terms of the actual performance.
When you go into these properties, you know, what are you, again, it varies on a case-by-case basis, but typically what are you having for an expense for renovating those units?
So it is case-by-case, and it's case-by-case in terms if it's structural or not. We typically spend between $4,500 to $7,000 per unit. The $7,000 will be including HVAC. The $4,500 will be just perhaps a paint, flooring, resurface countertop, not new granite, not anything. So we resurface the countertop, the vanity, the kitchen, and the bath inserts. We do that. And some basic light fittings if we need to do. We can do that for about $4,500 to $5,000, including flooring. And when I'm going to seven, I will be around, again, all of the above that I just mentioned, plus HVAC and plus an appliances package. So that's pretty what we call the premium unit. We basically chopped the 45 units in half, and the lower numbers, like 100, building 100 to 500, which is about 20 units, will have the basic rehab, and anything above it, they're also positioned in the community more at the back, nice layout, seeing everything elevated next to the dog park. They are getting the premium rehab, which is granite bench top and the whole hog. We don't need to do a lot of HVAC, so they are coming around, I think around six. But when I'm saying seven, that was including putting roof turbines and including building the dog parks. You know, so you kind of, when you talk price per unit, there is a lot of external work that was done as well, including to that particular unit turn. It's like the whole community turn, you divide it.
Yeah, kind of build that in, break it down on a cost per unit basis. So when you have these properties that need value add, how are you seeing it when, once you get those improved, you're starting to change that, you get some, you know, maybe unsavory tenants out. How do you see that reflect in terms of the neighborhood? Do you see that kind of change the way of the whole feel of the neighborhood at all? Have you had any properties like that?
Yes. It's more about the community within the area. So some properties, I try to buy in like C to B, you know, upper C neighborhoods as a whole. One of my criteria is not buying in flood zones and war zones. So I'm very strict to that. I kind of like neighborhood which people feel that they are safe to live there. And, you know, but in terms of the community itself, we're certainly seeing a lot of turn in the demographic, and that was part of our strategy. So we take pride, you know, in improving people's life. The first thing we do when we come in is to do all the external improvements, like putting picnic tables, creating good signage, putting parking only for residents sign, and pick up your dog, you know, poo-poos and all that stuff, signs as well that they need to take care of the place. Big sign of watch out for kids playing around, and you know, all on one pole. So they first driving and they see all of that. And we really shifted the demographic of the property.
Yeah, and that's a fantastic part, you know, of multifamily is, yeah, it's a community within a community, but when you go through, you renovate these units, you make the property itself more welcoming, you're improving your tenants' lives, your, you know, all of the residents at your property. And if it's in the neighborhood, you know, there, if you have properties that had some unsavory characters in it, well, those neighbors would feel better about it. And then you don't know how many of those neighbors or, you know, down the street, wherever it may know someone that needs to get a new apartment. Well, they're going to, yeah, you know, and ours, well, they probably wouldn't know your name, but you've been, you know, new owners. They've really been fixing up the place. It's really nice. They have this dog park. That's, you know, that's a return on investment, an ROI there that you don't necessarily think of, but when you're improving the whole feel of that immediate area, it can pay off in the long run by making your job easier, or your property management's job easier, and filling those units.
Absolutely, absolutely. We had a lot of because the community is second on 3.5 acres. So once you drive in, it's like going in a loop. So you know, we get a lot of feedback from that. But we also had some other properties that we were there just looking around what Rob was done, and you do have the neighbors coming out and saying, you know, it's great to see that it's being improved, or finally somebody is taking care of the place and picking up the trash and really taking care of the place. I mean, our mission is to provide residents with a home, with a modern, affordable, and friendly living environment. So that's our mission, and we stick to that. We by no means want to be slum landlord, and we really want to provide people with good service.
Yeah, and you're able to achieve that, provide a great place to live, and make good returns. You know, so it's a win-win all across the board. Obviously, those are a couple of benefits within multifamily, but what do you really see as a couple of standout features that make multifamily unique and beneficial as an investment vehicle?
There are many benefits for multifamily. I think that one of the you know, the point that we discussed earlier is the ability to scale. The ability to scale and to create a passive income and multiple income stream with cash flow. It's relatively easy if you get the right deal and you know what you're doing, if you get the right education. But in effect, if you do it right and you do a good job, you are affecting the life of others as well. So it's very satisfying to be able to go into a community which is run down, which has been neglected by mom and pop owner for 30 years in my case, and really put a smile on people that already live there, and really make them feel that they have a good home and a good landlord, if you want, or owner who... ownership group or whatever the structure is, that take care of the place and care about that. So this is very, very satisfying. I like to take the ugly ducklings and turn them around and have people who enjoy to living there. That's very satisfying for me. Of course, there's a lot of tax benefits, like the you know, having the bonus depreciation. So you can, by investing in any real estate, but with apartment, it's just makes it easy when you buy a large transaction, typically over $1 million. You have a lot of tax saving that you can offset against your income. So a lot of passive investors go in and invest passively and have write-off of their income. So that's another way to look at it for people. But you know, the opportunities is endless. For me, is the ability to create the lifestyle by design, to create a cash flow business, because in the end of the day, buying a multifamily apartment community is buying a business. You buy an underperforming business, you reposition it, you turn it around, and you make it profitable. It's not rocket science. That's pretty much what it is. But in effect, you are affecting the life of the residents, the people who live there, in a positive way, which again, I'm saying it's very, very satisfying. And along the way, you're getting all those tax benefits. So I don't really see, you know, any negative reason about it. I just think it's a great vehicle, and that's why we're all so passionate about it.
Yeah, that list keeps stacking up for the benefits of it. So, yeah, it's just trying to get that word out, and, you know, people can go about it in a different way. They can joint venture on deals. You can own them, you know, just yourself if you're in that position, depending on the size and what your involvement you're looking to have in it. Or there's the syndication realm. There's many different avenues. So it's just finding the right one for you. Just a few quick questions here before we wrap up. What does the word retirement mean to you?
Financial freedom. That's what it is. And I mean not to stop working, but being in a position that you don't have to exchange your time for money. So you're basically able to choose what you do, when you do, or who you do it with. Having the lifestyle by design, having the ability to spend time with your loved ones when you want to travel, to do whatever you want to do, when you want to do, you know, within reason. And that's for me, basically. Retirement is to be able to be in a position that you don't exchange your time with money, meaning that you don't have to work all the time.
Yeah. Was there an event or a book that you read that really made you take action to get into multifamily investing?
For me, one of the things that really propped me up, and not just to take action, but ongoing support, is being part of a community. In our case, it's the Jake and Gino community, the Wheelbarrow Profit. Being part of the community for 3 years now, and been coaching for Jake and Gino as well, accountability coach. And being part of the community is really something that kept me going, you know, in the education part of stuff when I started, but also as a ongoing thing, being able to network with the people, to share experiences, to help other people. That's really, really, you know, really, really helpful. And of course, I'm always educating myself. I'm always listening to podcasts. I'm always reading books, whether it's self-development or whether it's real estate books. Some real estate books, to name a few, I can say, of course, the Wheelbarrow Profit book is great. Ken McElroy's got the Advanced Real Estate Investing book, which is about multifamily. That's a good book. And Brian Murray's Crushing It is another great book. I really, really enjoy that book. There's a lot of case studies in that. So yeah, certainly these are the main things.
Awesome. And yeah, just having that continued support and access to knowledge, you know, being able to bounce ideas off of a group of people, you know, when you get into those conversations, a lot of great ideas start flowing, and, you know, might have to refine them a little bit, but able to have continued growth. So that's great. How do you kind of like to give back, share your knowledge? You know, do you have anything going on that you've been working on to help others, whether it's in apartment investing or just outside of that?
Yes. So, well, there is. I mean, I got my own personal stuff that we do. My wife and I, we travel to India every few years, and we teamed up with the, well, teamed up. We became friend of family over there that we've been helping them out a little bit. This is our little contribution to this family, and we would like to do a bit more of that in the future. We've been doing it for a number of years now, so that's on the personal level. But with real estate, really, we always contribute on Jake and Gino community, on the Wheelbarrow Profit Facebook page, and I got my own YouTube channel that we regularly put videos there just to share and you know, pretty much show people how we're doing the things, so we can have some feedbacks and they can see what we're doing. And recently, earlier this year, Marco and I started the Make It Happen Mastermind group, which is a mastermind group program, that MIH Mastermind. We got groups of 4 students in each session, so it's a monthly meetup that we're meeting for 12 months, and we're working together on basically building their business, their multifamily business, through an ecosystem of deal finders and deal sponsors, people with knowledge that can bring deals to the closing tables. And we teach them, it's not just multifamily and real estate by itself, but we also teach, some of them have their other businesses, and we help them to create a plan of scaling that business up. And basically, if you like, creating a business, but not a job, making sure that you're in a position that you are working on your business and not in your business. Because as you scale up your business, even in the real estate business, you want to keep working on the thing that you enjoy doing, whether it's underwriting, which most people don't enjoy doing, or whether it's networking, hunting for the deals, closing the deals, and negotiating. So this is a growth prospect that we walk through the MIH Mastermind group and help people to, you know, progress with their real estate goals. So that's been my main focus, apart from my own investing, within the last few months.
Yeah, that's great. You're in a position to give back both your knowledge and your resources. So again, another way that you're able to share what you have and, you know, what you've been able to earn through your success in investing. So lastly, how can listeners, you know, get in contact with you or find out more about what you do?
Listeners can visit the website, the mihmastermind.com. And again, we have a free ebook over there that now we're giving away. If you visit the mihmastermind.com website, you can jump online and you'll see there's a banner on the top that you can click on that and receive the free ebook, which it's about the real estate cycle, the different phases of the cycle and the opportunity that each phase creates, because every phase of the cycle has different opportunities and different strategies that you can apply in each phase. And especially nowadays that the market is had over 10 years of a positive growth run of history, you know, we had a very good long run of a bull market here. Now things are going to turn very soon, and I think people need to know where to position themselves when the market eventually turns, which probably going to happen within the next 24 months, if not even earlier, with everything that's going on right now in the world.
Yep. Again, had a past episode, just know where you're at in the market cycle. So yeah, great resource. And the link for MIH Mastermind, I'll have that in the show notes, as well as for the YouTube page for anyone that wants to check it out. So be sure to check out the show notes. But that's all I have for you today. I really appreciate you coming on. Just a lot of great knowledge and insight that you've had. And, you know, look forward to having you on again somewhere down the road and touch base with more deals that I'm sure you'll be pumping out. So Absolutely. Thank you again, and wish you well. Take care.
Thank you, Barrett. Make it happen.
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode of Apartment Investing for Early Retirement. Please be sure to rate and review wherever you listen to podcasts, and check us out on Facebook and Instagram. The links will be in the show notes to bring you directly to those pages. And if you enjoy the show, please be sure to share it out on social media so that we can reach more and more people to help educate them about the opportunity that multifamily investing provides to help reach their version of retirement sooner than later. Take care, everyone.